This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Savannah Guthrie's mother, Nancy Guthrie, missing day 40. Tonight, an elite squad at Quantico, the FBI, trying to create a shoe cast. This, as we learn, the FBI has returned to a particular restaurant to re-interrogate restaurant employees. And what about the possibility of retinal scanning of the porch guy? And this as APB, All Points Bulletin, on a male trying to have a full sleeve removed, a full sleeve tattoo removed. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. I want to thank you for being with us.
Stalkers cannot help but write about their relationship with the victim and the victim's families. This perpetrator had gleaned a lot about Nancy Guthrie's life.
The perp likely has a criminal history. Maybe the stalker did glean a lot, but what evidence did the perp, I'm not convinced he's a stalker of Nancy Guthrie. I think that he is a con trying to make a quick dollar or million. What clues did he unwittingly leave behind? We have analyzed him from the top of his head to the soles of his shoes. Enter Professor of Forensics, Jacksonville State University, Joseph Scott Morgan, death investigator, author of Blood Beneath My Feet on Amazon, and star of a hit podcast series, Body Bags with Joseph Scott Morgan. I was concerned about any possibility of a shoe print because the walkway to Nancy Guthrie's home, if we could see that, I believe is gravel. But let's start with A and end at Z. What is a shoe cast and what is electromagnetic lifting?
Okay, there's any number of ways to raise a shoe print, if you will. Traditionally, what we think of, and we still do this, Nancy, if you think about a foot going into a soft, malleable surface like mud, soft dirt, even sand, you leave behind an impression, okay? And we can cast that. We can put dental stone in there, let it dry, pull it out, and you have this image of the shoe print. Here, we have an example, for instance, of an electrostatic lift. This is completely different. This is where we put down a charged sheet of Mylar, and it actually goes over an area where there is a suspected print that's generally left in soil or dust that's not really, you're not able to see it with the unaided eye very well, but what it does is that there is a magnetic charge and that lifts that print off of that surface and you can pull it up and you can actually examine it. Here we have an example of an electrostatic lift being conducted just yesterday at Jacksonville State. And for my money in this particular case, Nancy, I'm leaning more into the electrostatic lift here because, you know, you don't have a lot of soft mud around there or soft dirt that you're going through. But even if you look at that porch, Nancy, look at that porch. Those are tiles out there. Now, there would be a myriad of prints out there. But what if they went in there and actually did electrostatic lifts there? And also, if they can determine where the point of entry is in this house, go to the interior of the house and do those lifts there. If there's an area around her bed where you've got kind of a smooth, non-porous or less than porous surface, like a ceramic tile there, which a lot of houses in the Southwest have, you do that around her bed. You see if there's any kind of weird prints that are there, like a man's sneaker imprint that's left. And that is possible. You can do that. I just hope it's not too late. I hope that they protected that scene initially. But I got to tell you, hope's dimming as far as I'm concerned.
Joe Scott Morgan, don't you remember at the get-go where anybody and their little sister could walk up to the front porch and take photos because Nanos did not secure the scene. Not once, but twice did not secure the scene.
Yep.
Ghouls were going up and taking photos of Nancy Guthrie's blood on the front porch.
Yep.
This is from our friends at KOLD. And as a matter of fact, someone tried to deliver a pizza to the crime scene. That's how unprotected it was. How is that going to affect any hope of a shoe cast?
tremendously. As you know, as an attorney, Nancy, once you take that tape down, it is open season at that point. Any attorney worth their salt can argue, hey, look, anything can be planted in there. You want to know real big evidence of this and the carelessness that was taken with the scene. I'll always go back to this, is when you see that blood deposition on the surface of that portico area there, Nancy, the one thing you always see, and you even see the perp standing on it right there. Look at that. Look at that. Standing on that mat. Nancy, we saw images of that mat adjacent to the blood. They did not collect that mat the first time out. You know, I sit there and I think of it. Does your mind work? You know, that's crime scene 101. Why was not the mat collected at that point in time? Because you have any number of things that could be transferred onto that surface. I hope somebody went back and collected it, but once you've taken the guardrails down at that point in time, it's open. Anybody can walk up and take a photo. It can be argued in court that you can plant stuff at that point in time. It is paramount that you protect that scene. And there's just by virtue of the fact that you did not value that mat anymore, then they obviously didn't, then you're at risk here from losing valuable evidence, and anybody can have access to it. Any lawyer worth their salt can say, yeah, stuff was planted. They secured it. They took the tape down. Lord only knows who got in there.
What is an electrostatic lift?
Okay, so what you're doing with this sheet of Mylar is that you're actually placing a charge on that sheet, okay? And as you place that charge on there, what happens is it attracts the underlying dust particles, lifts it onto that sheet, and boom, it's permanently there, okay? So and this is the beauty of it, for a moment, you have frozen in time that image of that shoe impression that's there. Now, here's the trick. Can you take that image that you've frozen on that sheet, okay, and take it back and compare it? Well, can you profile that footprint? Like, can someone that is a footprint expert say, okay, we're looking for somebody that pronates, supinates? Can we categorize the shoe print? Can we say, okay, this manufacturer created this sole? Okay, and you can say whatever manufacturer, you know, insert company there, all right? And if you can begin, and again, as you know, Nancy, with investigations, it's a big investigative funnel. You want to try to narrow at all times. We want to try to exclude as much stuff as we want to try to exclude as much as we possibly can to narrow our field. Can they take images, for instance, of those shoes that we see right here captured at the scene in those still shots? Can they profile those shoes and say, okay, this is the manufacturer of those shoes? Automatically, you've narrowed your field. And can you say, if you do the electrostatic lift, can you say, is it a possibility that particular brand of shoe could leave this kind of impression? Well, now you have really, you know, kind of fine-tuned your target area at this point in time. The trick now is to find out who belongs to those shoes, who was wearing those shoes at that point.
I know it works in a lab, but given the fact that the general public could go right up onto her porch, and how many people from the sheriff's office were in and out of the home on the interior, I don't know that we can get this type of evidence. There's still a chance. Straight out to Dave Mack joining us, Crime Stories investigative reporter. What can you tell me about re-emerging video of the interior of Nancy Guthrie's bedroom, which I'd like to point out has a window right there on ground level? You can look right into and see her bedroom, the layout, everything, how close her bed is to the door, the window, the works. What is this, Dave Mack?
What you're seeing is when the Today Show went, they were trying to show the closeness of Savannah Guthrie with her mom, Nancy, and showing this side of Nancy Guthrie, the mom, showing how she taught Savannah to make a bed. And that's why you see her doing the corners there. But this was done in an effort to, you know, make it more personable and connecting with their audience. But what it's showing is that is her bedroom, Nancy Guthrie's bedroom. And she's been in this home since the 90s. She's been in the same bedroom, same layout ever since. So as you pointed out, the window is right there. We're looking at Savannah Guthrie's mom, Nancy Guthrie, in the room with the bed might have been pulled out of the night she was kidnapped.
And we see what she keeps on her bedside table and more. Hey, Dave Mack, Megyn Kelly found this and brought it to everyone's attention. When was that taken? When was that shoot from our friends at Today with Mrs. Guthrie?
It was in 2013.
Because I started to say she's getting around really well. And does not seem to have any mobility issue, but, you know, many years have passed since then. Let's take a look at that video again, because whoever searched Savannah Guthrie's salary and Nancy Guthrie's home address may very well have pulled up video just like this. What clues can we glean from this video? A lot. A lot from our friends at Today.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
To Joseph Scott Morgan, Professor of Forensics, what do you learn from this?
Just looking, well, you look at the nature of the flooring, and it's really hard to kind of pick up and try to understand it. Has it changed over that period of time? Is it a smooth, kind of semi-porous floor that we could go in and collect anything relative to shoe prints? You know, one of the things that you begin to think about is that folks were saying that she was taken from her bedroom. First off, I don't understand how they sourced that information particularly, but it's certainly
Because Savannah said it in one of her pleas. Right. She said, my mom was taken out of her bed.
Well, you have to take that. You have to take that and utilize that as, and I'm sure that they already have, because if she's saying that, that's rooted somewhere factually. So you're going to look at any kind of physical evidence that might be associated with an outside party that's there. And it could be anything from dusty prints that are left behind by shoes. It could be any kind of trace evidence, any kind of fiber evidence where they're putting hands on somebody to move them around.
We also see that bedspread, if she still has the same one, and obviously an MVAC would have to be used on that. It is a porous material to get potential DNA. Straight out to Brian Fitzgibbons joining us. He is Director of Operations USPA Nationwide Security, leading a team of investigators that specialize in missing people and go around the world finding them, rescuing them, particularly. He has an expertise in extractions from Mexico. He is a former Marine and Iraqi war vet. Brian Fitzgibbons, I can learn a lot from that video, and so could anybody, including the perp.
Yeah, certainly. And we see that the perp would have access to this readily online. Is he looking to see, are there camera locations inside of the house? Are there avenues of entry or egress in that room? And all of this should be caveated with the fact that there was an incredible amount of tension drawn to Mrs. Guthrie with Savannah's visit and the visit to that restaurant, that the FBI is now conducting interviews again with restaurant staff.
At some point, he reaches up to dismantle or up the door cam.
I see black and gray work. I can see some subtle shading on the edges.
And when he does that, much is revealed. Joining us now, a special guest, Jeff Garnett, co-founder, Inkless Tattoo Removal Centers, inklesstattooremoval.com. Jeff, I know that you, like me, have studied carefully the Porch Guy's wrist tattoo. Got a question for you. Jeff,
yes.
Have you ever been asked by a perpetrator to remove a tattoo?
Yes, actually, we have. We didn't know at the time that it was a perpetrator, but in 2021, there was a shooting death outside of a famous hotel in Manhattan, and it was all caught on surveillance camera. The perpetrator was, his picture was shown on the news, and everyone kept commenting on the fact that he had these full tattoo sleeves. Later the following week, a detective came in and questioned us because they had arrested him and they found our aftercare instructions in his car, So what had happened is the shooting had happened, I think, on a Thursday. It was all over the news the following morning. And that Friday, he came into one of our locations trying to get his sleeves removed. So we didn't know at the time, but they were able to show that that was his attempt to cover up the identifying marks.
So the video caught him with two full sleeves.
Yes.
Wow. Okay. And in his car, they found your aftercare instructions. Okay. How long would it take to remove a full sleeve, Jeff Garnett?
It takes a long time. It's not an instant thing where you come in and laser it and it's gone instantly. You know, we would all love for the technology to get there, but we're not quite there at this point. Probably at least a year. There are a lot of variables, different ink colors, different ink saturation levels, locations on the body, how healthy someone's immune system is. These are all factors that can impact it. But basically, the laser is breaking the ink into microscopic particles that are much easier for your immune system to remove. So we're pretty much just speeding up the natural fading process. When I started doing this 15 years ago, it would have easily taken 3 years. With the newer Pico technology, it's cut that in half, but it's still a year to a year and a half.
Bolo, be on the lookout for a male trying to have two full sleeves, or at least one full sleeve out of the Catalina Hills area, removed. Back to Jeff Garnett joining us, co-founder of Inkless Tattoo Removal Centers. So it takes a long time to finally get a full sleeve removed. Mm-hmm. Could you rush it? If someone said, I've got to have this thing off in 48 hours, could you do it? Is it physically possible?
Not with laser technology. The only way to do it instantly would be a surgical procedure called excision, where they would have to cut it out. And if that was a small tattoo, they'd be able to cut it out and it would be replaced with a scar. And that would be done by a plastic surgeon. If you're talking about a full sleeve, it would get into skin grafts. It just wouldn't be possible. Laser technology can remove that, but it's going to take a long time. Now, we're assuming the perp has a sleeve because you're seeing that wrist portion and it looks as if it's part of a much larger tattoo. Could that small portion be cut out surgically? Yes, it could, but there would definitely be a large scar in the place.
Once you have the tattoo completely removed, are there any traces left behind? You have an example on your neck, correct?
Yes, I used to have a tattoo right here, and there's nothing. It's there's no scar tissue, there's no shadow or skin discoloration. It depends. There's certain ink colors are easier to remove than others, but it looks to me like this is a black tattoo, black ink tattoo. And black ink responds really well to the laser. Black absorbs the full spectrum of light from the laser. So usually black ink can be removed completely.
It's a black and gray, which of course is just variations on black. So you're absolutely correct. I'm just curious, what was the tattoo you had removed?
It was a bat. It was a silly bat hanging upside down behind my
ear. A bat, as in the bat that flies out of a cave and jumps in your hair and tries to bite you?
Correct.
Okay, why did you have a bat on your neck?
A lot of my tattoos are kind of timestamps of different parts of my life, and I had moved temporarily to Austin, Texas, and there's a bridge in Austin that has about a million bats that live underneath it, and at dusk they all come flying out. So that was kind of my Austin, Texas tattoo.
Okay. I'm not a shrink. I can't analyze that. I'll just take it for what it is, for the probative value. But why do other people have tattoos removed typically?
There's a wide range of purposes. Sometimes people get a tattoo and don't like the way it came out, so they almost immediately want to get rid of it. There's the stereotypical boyfriend and girlfriend get each other's names and then break up. There's the most common one is people just outgrow it. You get something in your teens or 20s, and then in your 30s and 40s, your tastes change and you're a different person. But there also are some really more psychological reasons as well. You have really sad things like victims of human trafficking that have property of tattoos, and that's some of the things that we do pro bono for people. You have radiation tattoos for people, cancer survivors from when they had their procedures. So there really is a wide range. But the majority of the clients we see got something when they were younger, they've outgrown it, and their tastes have changed, and they're just a different person.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Jeff Garnett is joining us. He is the co-founder of Inkless Tattoo Removal Centers with multiple branches. Be on the lookout, please. Mm-hmm. Jeff Garnett, Full Sleeve Removal. That said, this leads me to another process, that process being AI used to create a ransom note. But first, before I get into that with Christian Hammond from Northwestern University, Dave Mack, what can you tell me about the last 48 hours where the FBI descends upon a Mexican restaurant to re-interrogate employees? A full 2 days of re-interrogation.
Nancy Guthrie and Savannah Guthrie went out to dinner back in November when the Today Show came to town and was filming Savannah back in Tucson. They went to El Charro, which is their favorite Mexican restaurant. Well, the FBI has been back in interviewing employees of the restaurant, specifically asking them if they noticed anyone standing around, maybe trying to ingratiate themselves with the cast and crew, anybody that acted weird. They were asking those types of questions of all of the employees in the El Charro, trying to determine if anyone was there that shouldn't have been or was acting inappropriately while they were there.
From our friends at Today, you know, I'm very curious about their line of questioning to these restaurant employees. If they saw anyone there that day that was unusual, if anyone hung around. You know, to Brian Fitzgibbons joining us, Director of Operations, USPA Nationwide Security, that must have been a memorable day for a lot of people to have a big star like Savannah Guthrie roll in. Very memorable. So it's not just the employees. They're going to be questioned about other people that were there that day to watch the filming. I guarantee if it's Gibbons, they're going to be asking, does anybody have a son, a black sheep son? Does anybody have a bad seed brother-in-law or son-in-law or cousin? Where the mom comes home and says, hey, guess what happened today? Savannah Guthrie was there with her mother. Or guess what's going to happen tomorrow? And what I want to do with that, Brian Fitzgibbons, is overlay it onto that Google Trend search where someone thought to question Savannah Guthrie's salary and in the same search, the home address for Nancy Guthrie, and then connect that person to someone we may find out about through the restaurant employees.
Certainly, a focus of those questions is going to be, who did you tell about this? Did you text anybody? Did you call anybody? Am I able to look at that text to see how did they respond, right? It may not be that they're focused solely on that restaurant employee, but who's on their periphery, who's in their circle that they told about this event and they told about Miss Guthrie living in Tucson, being connected to Savannah.
So it's not just limited to the employees. It's who they know, who they're related to, who may have been in the restaurant at that time. The line of questioning, I'm very curious about what that is, what it means, what we can glean from the FBI spending not one but two full days at the restaurant. So we believe, well, there are two restaurants in play that we know of right now. Of course, this is us on the outside looking in. Brian, there is the restaurant connected to that glove that was found about 2 miles from Nancy Guthrie's home. The glove was connected back to a restaurant employee, and that employee was cleared. There's that restaurant, and there is the restaurant at which Nancy Guthrie and Savannah Guthrie, let's see that video had the Arizona homecoming where Savannah went back home and she, you know, was with her family. They went to their favorite restaurant. They spent time in Mrs. Guthrie's home. Which restaurant are we talking about, Brian?
We're talking about this restaurant that you see here. And you have to remember, this isn't Hollywood, right? This is Tucson, Arizona. So you have a film crew, Savannah Guthrie, a nationally recognized TV show host, rolls into this restaurant. This would be quite an event for that restaurant and the people there. And I think it's important to mention, it's unlikely that it was happenstance that an abductor happened to be in the restaurant that day, you know, and saw Mrs. Guthrie. The most likely scenario is that somebody who was there, be it staff or a guest, actually communicated about, hey, I saw Savannah Guthrie with her mother at this restaurant. Another thing that law enforcement is undoubtedly doing is looking at the checks from that day. Who else was in the restaurant? Who paid with a credit card? What information does the restaurant have about the other guests? And then they're going to go out that one additional layer and start asking everybody who was there, who they communicated with about this.
Another possibility, Brian Fitzgibbons, is surveillance video. If it can be pulled down from the cloud of what was happening in the parking lot, let's just go with me on this. We know we have that video from a neighbor of cars zipping by around the time that Nancy Guthrie's pacemaker stopped connecting to the Bluetooth in her home. You know, 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, there are people heading back and forth toward her home, toward that street. This is from our friends at Fox News, by the way.
We too have heard the reports about a ransom letter in the media. As a family, we are doing everything that we can. We are ready to talk.
Joining me now, Christian Hammond, artificial intelligence expert. He is a professor of computer science at Northwestern University. Again, not shabby, Christian. Director of the Center for Advancing Safety of Machine Intelligence. Christian, thank you for being with us. What I'm getting at is I'm narrowing down who I'm looking for. I'm looking for a guy, what do we say, Jackie, between 5'9 and 6 feet?
5'9, 5'10.
At least one sleeve, one full sleeve, likely two full sleeves. I'm looking for someone that has that Ozark backpack. I'm looking for that receipt. I'm looking for someone from the Tucson area because they have a soft spot for two Tucson TV networks that maybe they grew up watching. I'm looking for someone that has a knowledge of Nancy Guthrie and her home, maybe connected in some tenuous way, not necessarily an employee of that Mexican restaurant. I believe we're looking for someone that may have a criminal record. And now I'm looking for someone that may have conducted that Google search we talked about early on that looked for Nancy Guthrie's home address and Savannah Guthrie's salary. Okay, that's a lot of data. Christian Hammond, think about the ransom note. Could the perp, if the ransom note is in fact connected, have used AI, artificial intelligence, to disguise their identity?
Well, certainly. I mean, the power of the language models is that you can have them say something that you want to say, but in a tone and in a cadence of words that is not yours. And so you can certainly disguise yourself that way. And you'll leave a little bit of a trace in doing so, but that trace is so minute and is so washed out in terms of all the other activity that's going on that you wouldn't be able to find it. And so, yes.
Christian, we established earlier that you're, you know, light years ahead of all of us mere mortals when it comes to this. I heard you. I know what all those words mean. But in the context of your sentence, I don't know what you're saying. You're telling me that Google can look through trillions of data points and they can find Nancy Guthrie's door cam and they can resurrect like Lazarus video footage we thought didn't even exist. Well, we listened to Nanos. That was our first mistake. But that said, and we can't put all of these facts together and come up with that artificial intelligence request?
Yeah. So finding the images is a targeted task. That is, they know where they should be looking. They know the features that are really important there. And that really gives them a lot of constraints in terms of what they're looking for. But when you're looking for an arbitrary query against a language model, well, there are dozens of language models. Some of them are local. Some of them anyone can use. Finding a tiny little piece of a request is an untenable. I mean, there's too much to search. And in the midst of all this, there might be other people who are going, I wonder what it's like. I wonder if you could generate a ransom note. And so they're generating them, and we will find them as well. And so we're really in a place where there's not enough focus in terms of what we're looking for to find the right thing. And I think it's actually in the movie about Turing and all of the work that he did in terms of decrypting, there was a moment where once he identified a target, that they knew they were looking for a particular thing in a particular message that gave them the ability to figure out what was going on. But if you don't have a target, it's incredibly difficult to find the right thing at the right time that gives you the right kind of information.
Okay, Christian Hammond, you are the artificial intelligence expert. In a perfect world, what would I need to track down that AI request to write the ransom note?
Well, a perfect world would be that we would be able to take a look at all the logs of all the interactions trivially. But that's a perfect world in terms of one thing, and that's finding stuff. But it's not a perfect world in terms of privacy, in terms of data leakage, in terms of I'm feeling like I'm using a system and I'm not telling it my entire life, and that life will be shared with everyone. So there have always been privacy issues. So even with the finding the images associated with this particular camera, there were privacy issues. That is, that she didn't have a subscription, and so they should not have been holding on to anything, but they were. Getting to all the footage associated with the cameras in her neighborhood. That's a privacy issue. That is, that unless you've signed off for your camera to be used, you can't use it. And so there's always this trade-off.
Okay, I understand. So there really is no perfect world in finding that AI request. Okay, let me ask you this. Many people have suggested there's a possibility of doing a retinal scan on the porch guy. There's some great shots of his eyes. What do you make of that? Let's see the shots.
Yeah. The problem is that they're good, but they're not magnificent. So retinal scans usually are done using infrared light to begin with, and they're marvelous. I mean, they're incredibly powerful in terms of being able to identify individuals. But you need that as the target. That is, if I've got a new image and I could get a retinal scan out of it, I have to have a thing to match it against. And we don't really have that. The other thing is that these
images... So even if there was enough data, Christian, to get the retinal scan, and you're saying it's just beyond enhancing it from those images, we have to have something to compare it to, like fingerprints. You may have a great fingerprint, but you got to have somebody to compare it to.
So he could leave fingerprints and DNA and footprints and all sorts of things. But if there's not a target for us to match them against, it doesn't help us unless we have him in hand.
Okay, Christian Hammond, I want you to go back to your think tank at Northwestern University and come up with some answers for me. Christian Hammond, Jeff Garnett, Brian Fitzgibbons, Joe Scott Morgan, and Dave Mack, thank you for being with us. Everyone, if you know or think you know anything about the disappearance of Nancy Guthrie, please dial toll-free 800-225-5324. To remain anonymous, 520-882-7463. There is a $1.2+ million reward for information leading to the whereabouts of Nancy Guthrie. Arrest, conviction not required. We remember American hero police officer Jamie Roman, Philly PD, shot and killed in the line of duty, leaving behind a grieving wife turned widow and children sentenced to life without their dad. American hero police officer Jamie Roman.
Nancy Grace signing off. Goodbye, friend.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.